This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by Berkeley Life Nitric Oxide Support Supplements. Nitric oxide is a vital signaling molecule in cardiovascular health. We all make nitric oxide in our bodies, but as we age, it starts to diminish naturally. Being proactive in maintaining nitric oxide levels is vital for healthful aging because an underperforming cardiovascular system will limit the effectiveness of any other supplementation in your regimen. Just two capsules of Berkeley Life daily provides the dietary nitrate equivalent of 7 ounces of beets and can support energy levels, maintain healthy blood pressure levels, and improve general circulation. It's the professional-grade nitric oxide supplement that I recommend and prescribe for my patients. This is only available from healthcare providers. To get your Berkeley Life professional supplements, just go to drhoffman.com/Berkeley Life. That's drhoffman.com/Berkeley Life. You can also get Berkeley Life's patented nitric oxide test strips to conveniently test your own nitric oxide levels safely and easily at home. That's drhoffman.com/Berkeley Life for Berkeley Life nitric oxide supplements. Welcome to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. It's our weekly Q&A with Layla, something that I very much look forward to doing because I am capably assisted by our nutritionist in residence, Layla Mutin, who's a wealth of information, and together we endeavor to answer your questions related to nutrition and innovative approaches to medicine. That's why we call it Intelligent Medicine. Hi, Layla. How are you?
Okay, Dr. Hoffman. How are you?
Radioprogram@AOL.com is the destination for a question. We couldn't make it any easier for you. Radioprogram@AOL.com. Yeah, we nailed down that domain. That's a good score. We've been doing it a long time, so we have it. This week, we have a lot of questions, but before we get to questions, an interesting development in the news. I was looking at the New England Journal of Medicine, and in it, it was, there's a lot of stuff about some esoteric drug or, some articles I can barely understand because they elucidate some new pathway that explains some obscure disease, like that I studied in medical school and promptly forgot about. But this one, it was extremely relevant. It was an article which talked about do we need milk? And, the article in the New England Journal of Medicine.
That's a great question.
Yeah, it was in the New England Journal of Medicine. So, like a practical question entitled Milk and Health, a review by Walter Willett and David Ludwig. Now, let's explain why. Walter David Willett is now considered the preeminent nutritionist in the country.
Right.
David Ludwig is interesting because they're a little on a different, sort of polar opposites.
Yes.
Willett is more of a whole grain kind of low fat guy.
Yeah.
And Ludwig is a very low carb guy.
Exactly.
So, yeah. And both of them are they're both MD, PhDs, and they're very well regarded in the field academically.
Yes.
So they collaborated on this article, a review article in the New England Journal of Medicine. And you read
I
don't know if you read the original article, but you read a summary of that
article. I read a summary of it, yeah.
And so what they're saying basically is that, the current guidelines state that, let's see, what do they say? The milk has featured in every iteration of the U.S. dietary guidelines since its first publication in 1917. What they say here, they say, what's the current recommendation? They say that you should have like 3 cups of low-fat or non-fat dairy products every day. That's part of the My Plate program, right?
Right.
Dairy is an essential food. So they're saying that, however, they say it's not really very evidence-based.
Right.
The recommended amount in the U.S., 3 glasses per day of milk.
Oof.
Or equivalent amounts of cheese or other dairy products, but they must be low-fat. So first of all,
There's a big argument about, you know, whether milk has to be low fat. And in fact, there are studies that show that there's no harm in drinking whole milk.
That's right.
And in fact, kids who don't drink whole milk are more likely to gain weight.
Yes. Because whole milk will have a little less lactose in it as opposed to low fat or non-fat milk, number one. Number two, whole milk, the fat in dairy can be beneficial for those who are having dairy. It's got some transvacinic acid.
CLA.
Yes, which is the precursor to conjugated linoleic acid, which can be a powerful anti-cancer prevention.
Cancer prevention, but also
exactly.
It's been touted as something to moderate weight gain.
Yes,
as a potential diet product.
There's no harm
CLA,
in whole
you
milk.
Know,
right. Because fat is not a problem.
Right. So, precisely. The dietary guidelines 2015 to 2020 recommend that individuals aged 9 years and over consume 3 cup equivalents of fat-free and low-fat 1% dairy products.
Yeah.
And this includes milk, yogurt, cheese, and fortified soy milk, which, however, is not a dairy product, but I guess they feel that people who have, like, major allergies to dairy, they can
have soy milk.
So, of interest, you know, in this review, they talk about, you know, is dairy a natural? And it turns out one of the most interesting things is that evolution is progressing among humans.
Yeah.
And, you know, the natural selection is progressing among humans.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we are sort of interfering with natural selection. We're keeping, I mean, this sounds like eugenics, you know, what the Nazis talked about and their precursors. Actually, the Nazis borrowed it from American eugenicists. This notion that, you know, you cull the herd and you, you know, once Darwin established natural selection, they said, well, there's no natural selection, so let's kill the invalids, the cripples, you know, and get them out of the population. Now we by means of life-saving procedures, we keep people alive who ordinarily wouldn't survive in the wild.
Yeah.
So we say we're sort of tampering with evolution now.
Mm-hmm.
But it turns out that around 3,000 years ago, a change occurred, particularly in Scandinavian countries, but also in Africa, where they raise cows.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The Maasai people drink a lot of milk.
Yes.
And they also happen to drink a lot of animal blood.
Milk and blood diet.
Right.
Maasai.
But certain populations adapted to milk as adults. Generally, it's one of those things that as a child, you have the ability to drink certainly mother's milk.
Yeah.
And then maybe cow's milk for a while, and then you lose it. A lot of people who are adults can't have lactose intolerance.
Mm-hmm.
But especially Scandinavian, Swiss people, you know, people who are perhaps from the Asian steppes where they, Genghis Khan and, you know,
Mongolia,
the Mongol hordes.
Exactly.
You know,
they raise yak milk. Yogurts and
right.
and fermented
but
things
this is
that
a,
they made.
This isn't natural. A lot of people say, look, what animal as an adult, you know, drinks milk.
Mm.
You know, I mean,
correct.
We give...
That's
we,
true.
We give cats milk, you know, sometimes in the bowl. But, you know, ordinarily, once you're weaned, you don't drink milk.
Drink milk, right?
They talk about that.
Yeah.
But what they're saying here is that these recommendations to drink milk are not really that science-based.
Mm-hmm.
They are probably sort of politically based and economically based.
Yes.
In other words, there's a dairy industry.
Right.
And the FDA, or the USDA, the mm-hmm. Department of Agriculture, had a twofold purpose. One was to help us decide what to eat, what's healthy.
Yeah.
But also to promote industry and mm-hmm. agriculture. And, you know, the dairy industry was a very important part of the economy.
That's true. Still is.
It still is, but it is
but
taking a hit.
It really, really is.
People drinking less milk.
Yep.
And also, there's a lot of milk substitutes.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of people are under the impression that milk is not natural, that they're allergic, and it's true. I mean,
that
milk causes
true.
A lot of problems.
It does. It does.
For some people. So in this article, they argue basically that this milk thing is kind of a made-up thing. You know, it's like one of the aspects of the U.S. dietary guidelines that is not really rational and scientifically based.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, there has been some scientific research to show that milk drinkers aren't doing their bone density any favors,
mm-hmm.
for one thing.
The thought
and
was that
more
you,
milk
if
is
you
more
don't
problematic.
If you don't have milk, your bones will crumble.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's not all about, it's not all about, and we're one of the biggest dairy eating nations.
What are other good calcium sources? I mean, if you don't drink milk, I mean,
kale, broccoli, other greens, almonds.
Is it bioavailable?
Yes. Okay. Yes, it's bioavailable calcium for the most part.
And the other
thing is some phytic acid, but yeah.
Sardines.
Sardines are great with the bones. Any soup or broth or stew that you make where you're simmering a carcass with bone, that calcium is leaching into the broth,
right.
And we're getting that that way as well. And it's not all about calcium everywhere for our bone health.
We only absorb like 1/7 of the calcium we consume.
Right.
So it's highly regulated by the body how much we take in. Just throwing your 4 or 5 Tums pills a day at you is not necessarily going to make all that calcium go to where it's supposed to go.
No. It's never a good idea to be taking all that Tums either.
Yeah. And it might actually become metastatic.
Yeah.
The calcium might deposit in your kidneys and cause stones, or it might deposit in your arterial walls and cause arterial calcification.
What you and I know to be problematic about dairy, I believe, is different from what this article is kind of leaning towards.
Right.
Their agenda for going towards a more plant-based approach questioning.
This is Walter Willett's influence.
Walter Willett.
You marry the argument about what's the best diet for humans to the argument about preserving the environment, climate change.
Yes.
And you say dairy is a very high carbon footprint industry.
Right.
It
doesn't have to be.
It's in fact dairy in the ideal sense is regenerative.
That's true.
Because the cows poop, they put the nitrogen fertilizer into the soil.
Yeah.
The grass that grows that they eat fixes a lot of carbon dioxide.
That's true. That's what the plants are eating is the CO2.
And the soil regenerates.
And the dairy industry is actually using less water now. I don't know the percentages. Mm-hmm. Less than they were even 15 years ago. So that's also something. And if you think about it, if you compare it to something like almond milk, for example, about your plant-based diet, almonds require a lot of water.
Yeah.
So what are we talking about?
They grow
about?
In a very hot environment.
Exactly. Now, I'm not a big fan of dairy for those who can tolerate it and have it, and that's fine.
Yeah.
But I'm still of the mind of it being problematic for many of our patients with autoimmune conditions. The casein
allergies.
In dairy is problematic. Allergies.
You know, when spring is coming up and you're very congested, maybe it's a good idea to cut back on wheat and dairy.
And dairy. Dairy is a phlegm maker.
Those are the two biggest culprits.
Yeah. Right. It's a phlegm and mucus maker, and it doesn't mean about allergy. And again, we're the only animals walking around on the planet who, after we've been weaned from the breast, are now drinking the milk from another animal.
Yeah.
Yeah. Some of you may say, but think about that for a moment.
The other thing about dairy in, you know, it, pristine, organic dairy, might be unprocessed, might be okay.
Might be okay, but, like the raw milk
but
and
the
so forth.
Dairy to which pesticide, you know, it tends to be high on the food chain. It concentrates pesticides and environmental pollutants.
Right.
And then also they feed sometimes bovine growth hormone to amp up the milk production by the animals. And also the composition of, you know, you are what you eat is. The animals that are fed on corn and feed that's very rich in omega-6 fatty acids, the milk therefore has a different fatty acid composition.
That's right.
Less omega-3. Yeah.
Which will be more pro-inflammatory. The other thing about milk, any animal's milk, there are a lot of growth factors. Mm-hmm. It's meant for a growing calf.
Right.
For a growing baby. And then after that, what are all these growth factors doing to us already grown adults?
Right.
What's it growing in us, possibly?
Basketball players.
Right. Basketball players. It may be problematic.
There really is something to that because, you know, I think that
insulin-like growth factor is a problem.
Yes.
And milk is an insulin trigger, not just by virtue of the carbohydrate, the lactose it contains, but the insulin-like growth factor.
And we have a concern about IGF vis-a-vis cancer because it is a growth promoter for cancers.
Exactly.
So, we dissuade our men with prostate cancer from taking dairy products.
Yes.
Not a lot of cheese. That's not pizza.
Right.
That's not great.
Right.
Perhaps also women with breast cancer.
Right. Or any cancer for that matter because of those growth factors away from dairy, eating very, very clean. Other people who must stay away from animal milk are autoimmune. patients for the most part. It's true that many with autoimmune
on the autoimmune paleo diet.
On the autoimmune paleo diet, some
AIP.
Of them are able to take, say, goat's milk or sheep's milk.
I've been
or
using a little
dairy.
Bit of goat's milk crumble to make my. I make a salad with beets, arugula.
A little goat cheese is nice with those
beets. A little goat cheese on that, yeah. And also
that's
throw some walnuts, raw walnuts on that.
A little pear, sliced pear is
yeah,
actually
that
nice.
Too. Uh-huh.
So things of that nature, many with
but
autoimmunity
very sparing.
Can.
I'm very sparing.
Very sparing amount.
Yeah. Yeah.
Can
more
tolerate
flavor,
that.
More for flavor as a
that's
condiment
true.
Rather than as a.
Because it's a sprinkling. It's almost like you're sprinkling a little
yeah.
salt or something.
And, you know, I know that I get more allergic when I take. Lots of cheese and dairy.
Yeah.
So, especially in the allergy season where I have
right.
seasonal allergies, I keep it to a minimum.
Mm-hmm.
I allow myself a little more during the winter where there's less pollen
yeah.
in the air.
Cow's milk casein is problematic for those with autoimmunity more than anything.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. Do we need milk? I don't believe we need milk.
You know, we have a lot of
milk.
Patients with migraines who get better when they're off of
oh,
dairy.
Oh, sure.
We have a lot of patients who have
especially
arthritis
aged
who
cheeses,
get better.
Exactly. The mm-hmm. tyramine and cheeses. These are dairy products.
Histamine intolerant patients.
Yes.
The fermented dairy.
Fermented dairy
so
and aged cheese as well.
Mm-hmm.
That's problematic.
But it has to be individualized.
It does.
And it may depend on people's ethnic or racial backgrounds,
yeah.
their genetics.
Yeah.
You know, how many generations have their ancestors consumed dairy? Is it a
that's
regular
true.
Part of their... So,
that's
hence, I think one of the crazy things I see is the proliferation of ice cream shops in Chinatown. I mean, there's a populace... Well, and by the way, China is a very heterogeneous country. So, in North China, they might have better tolerance than people who are in, you know Cantonese people in
right.
South China,
right.
where dairy really was not at all part of their diet.
And that's why many are lactose intolerant.
Yeah.
They don't have the
they
enzyme.
They have gastrointestinal maladies.
Yeah,
and
they don't have the lactase
right.
that helps break down.
All kinds of problems.
Which is interesting. So do we need milk at all? I believe as babies we do. I'm a huge fan of nursing your baby, breastfeeding.
And augmenting with formulas
exactly,
because not all women
if you
can.
Need it.
Right?
Exactly.
Right.
And doing the best you can that way. And I think baby animals need mother's milk until they're weaned.
I think,
and then beyond that, do we need milk? I don't think so.
Not necessarily.
Not if you're on a very good diet, especially.
Yeah.
No, it's not the best source of calcium.
The adaptation was in the article. They talk about how the adaptation was when we got away from a lot of plant-based foods that are rich in calcium and went more towards a grain-based diet, like
yeah.
in ancient Egypt and ancient
right.
Mesopotamia.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the calcium came from dairy sources that
mm-hmm.
may have augmented the calcium
right.
in the diet.
But when they were having their grain-based diets and more phytates, more phytic acid,
which
that
grabs
became,
on.
It
which,
grabs on and it keeps yeah. you from absorbing
Mal-absorb.
That calcium.
Thank you. Yeah.
And magnesium and iron.
Yeah.
If we want to, you know,
it's a chelating agent and it holds on
right.
to these things.
Right.
Yeah. All right. Well, very interesting. Okay. So, anyway,
yeah.
I'm glad that it's finally something practical in the New England Journal of Medicine.
There you go.
News you can use.
News you can use.
Right.
Very good.
Instead of the latest blockbuster
yeah.
drug.
Okay. We've got an email from Mariam, and she's asking about SPMs, the anti-inflammatory supplement. How long after taking a dose of 2 capsules twice daily?
Specific pro-resolving mediators.
There you go. Specific pro-resolve.
I love it. There are things called resolvins.
Resolvins.
Yeah, that's
yeah.
cool.
Well, somebody named it that, and it's a good name to have.
Yeah. It's there are things that resolve inflammation.
Right.
Okay.
So how long after taking a dose of 2 capsules
twice daily?
By the
way, we did a whole podcast with Georgia Austin on that subject, if you want to find that.
Oh, terrific.
It was
good,
a recent podcast of last month or so.
Mm-hmm.
It was a deep dive on SPM science.
Yeah.
And a couple of companies are offering it. The main source these days, the one I use is made by Metagenics.
Mm-hmm.
It's called SPM.
Mm-hmm.
And
we've seen some very good results with it.
Right.
And Marianne is wondering how long after taking a dose of 2 capsules twice daily will it take to see high sensitivity C-reactive protein and other inflammatory markers improve?
results may vary.
That's true. That's true.
So it depends. I mean,
yeah.
I think you're going to see some improvement.
I would wait at least 3 months before the next inflammatory marker test.
Have a hidden unresolved infection.
Yeah.
Or let's say you have leaky gut syndrome. Mm-hmm. Or let's say you have a food intolerance that is triggering inflammation.
Yes.
And you just take SPM, you may not see, you know, the results that you're looking. You know, if you have a lot of inflammation, you want to get on an elimination diet. You want to take other anti-inflammatories, curcumin and fish oil. Frankly, I don't know because I always use SPM in combination with other things.
There you go. And don't just rely on the SPM. If your CRP is high for other reasons like metabolic syndrome, hyperinsulinemia, high blood sugars, things of that nature, you want to get that under control.
Or it could be a dental infection.
Yes, that's true.
Certainly it could be, you know, something like smoking. We know that inflames the lungs. It could be a sinusitis. It could be...
And you don't want to have your blood draw on those for those inflammatory markers if you have a cold.
Right.
Or you're just getting over a cold. Or you have an infection
or
something.
If you've just done a half marathon or something.
Exactly. You had dental work done.
Yep.
And stuff. That's a reason for inflammation.
Yep.
And you may see false high HSCRP.
Yep.
For that matter.
Yep.
Because anything that's happening in our mouth and gums will also translate to our coronary arteries.
Yep.
And that's what HSCRP is measuring.
Okay.
Right?
High sensitive C-reactive protein.
Right. So, Marianne, wait at least 3 months. But, you know, do a little self-inventory of what else is happening. Hopefully you'll see some trending down,
you know.
Yeah, you should see some trending down with that. Thank you for that question. Okay, we've got one from Deborah. Dear Dr. Hoffman, I've been experiencing migraines with aura, and I've been told by 2 different neurologists to take prophylactic medicine to prevent the onset. The options offered are 1 of 3 categories. Number 1 is anti-seizure medication. Number 2 is antidepressants, which apparently are used to prevent migraine. And number 3, heart medication.
Right. These are older options for migraines. There's actually a new category of medications that have just been approved.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I don't think she even mentioned, you know, Imitrex, things like that.
Right.
You know, so... The new migraine medications are referred to, there's one called Ajovy, there's one called Amovig, and there's one called Emgality.
I've seen Emgality commercials.
Yeah.
Okay.
They target a different pathway. It's a calcitonin-dependent pathway.
Hmm.
And, they're not fail-safe. They're injectable. They're expensive. Actually, there's one that's there's a pill that's called Rayvow. Crazy names.
Rayvow.
Rayvow.
Uh huh.
So, yeah, there's a whole new ball game when it comes to that. So you should be seeing a migraine specialist.
Yeah.
And usually they're neurologists. Mm-hmm.
So these 2 different neurologists, this is what they told her. They must be old school neurologists.
Well, I think what they decided is let's go with the old things first.
Yeah. You know?
So the heart medications are beta blockers. They seem to block this whatever. Mm-hmm. There's also, sometimes they use calcium channel blockers, which by the way, magnesium is a good calcium channel blocker.
Mm.
And, then there's the anti-seizure medications like, they're probably...
Tegretol?
Not Tegretol.
No.
That's...
Dilantin?
Dilantin, you know, the... No. Depakote. Depakote.
Depakote.
Depakote.
Okay.
Depakote.
Okay.
Depakote, it could be used. What was the other category that they were thinking of?
Antidepressants.
Oh, yeah, sure. You know, because...
Just because an antidepressant might help a whole lot of things,
yeah,
apparently.
There's some like Cymbalta that are designed to help with pain.
Yeah.
You know, all these medications, there's a price to pay, there are consequences, but, you know, migraines can be devastating. What are some of the natural strategies that we like to use?
Well, Deborah, first of all, she's 47 years old. She's in good shape, normal weight, normal blood pressure, never smoked. She's not on any other medication. And the migraine she has leads to temporary vision impairment.
You know, healthy people can have migraines.
I know.
Yeah.
Numbness, speaking difficulty,
oh, yeah.
confusion.
That's
and
devastating.
She's had an MRI to
sure.
confirm
yeah.
all
right.
of that. So, riboflavin.
Right, high dose riboflavin.
Butterbur.
Butterbur.
Magnesium.
Uh-huh. Particularly the, we like the magnesium that's brain active.
L-threonate.
Protosorb magnesium.
Protosorb magnesium.
By protocol.
What do we think of Feverfew? And why am I thinking of that instead
Feverfew,
of the
yeah, it's good.
Butterbur?
There's
but
some,
I think Butterbur the, may
they're similar. But
they are similar.
They're herbals that can be helpful.
Okay.
A lot of the natural migraine formulas contain either Butterbur or Feverfew or
yeah.
both.
Yeah.
Then there's the migraine diet, you know.
Yes.
What are typical migraine triggers? We tell people to stay off dairy.
Stay off dairy, especially aged cheeses, yeasted foods, mm-hmm. wine like red wine,
oh,
tyramine-containing
yeah.
foods,
and we would
salamis.
Do an investigation to see if someone has histamine intolerance who has migraines
oh,
and
yeah.
treat that.
Yeah, because a lot of those are histamine
yep.
Forming foods or mm-hmm. histamine-rich foods.
Right.
That's also problematic there. So, yeah, Deborah.
Maybe give them some DAO.
Mm.
Diamine oxidase, which helps to break mm-hmm. down histamine.
Yep. Yep.
Some people are DAO deficient, and there's actually a gene that determines that. Our genetic tests sometimes tell us that people have mm-hmm. problematic synthesis of DAO, which is something that breaks down the histamine.
There you go. So that could be something.
And we can give
yeah.
histamine, we can give DAO mm-hmm. as a supplement these days.
Mm-hmm.
There's various supplements that are
yeah.
contain DAO.
What are your thoughts on the side effects of these medications?
That, you know, you yeah. pays your money and you takes your chances. They all have side effects.
Right,
yeah.
right. If these migraines are so but debilitating.
But it's a risk-benefit equation. I mean, if you have really bad debilitating migraines and they're not better with anything
yeah.
else, you need to try medications.
Right.
And
right.
The new hope is that there's a new, there's actually, she said there were three categories. There are like five categories.
There are, okay.
Yeah. I mean, Imitrex okay. is another one, you know,
yeah.
and that genre of things.
Right.
So, you know, she can try these other things. They're cheaper. They're easy to use.
Mm-hmm.
They're the, you know, old line treatments. And if they don't provide sufficient relief, then the doctors
get a third opinion, Deborah. She's already seen two neurologists.
See a headache specialist neurologist.
See a headache specialist neurologist. There you go. Okay. Thank you for that question. We hope you feel better
and,
soon.
And, you know, the musculoskeletal things. They're also, we can give intravenous magnesium. We can do Botox.
Oh,
which
my,
relaxes
Botox.
The muscles. Yeah. Relaxes the muscles.
Yeah.
Yeah, but there's some evidence that Botox injections to some of the muscles that go into spasm help with migraines.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So.
All right. So, good point at which to pause because we divide our podcast into two parts. And lest we go over time, we're going to ask that you advance to part two of today's Intelligent Medicine podcast. It's our weekly Q&A with Layla. Radio program at AOL.com is the destination for questions. Keep them coming. And we got more coming up for you in part two. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, today with Layla Mutin, and this is Intelligent Medicine.